For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show with me, Tim Fuel, back with another weekly look at the world that was non-league football. And who knows, maybe one day it will be non-league football again. But we live in different times, but in an attempt to assert some sort of normality, I'm pleased to say the stalwart of the show, Mr. Dave Anderson, joins me once again by the power of the internet.
Good evening, mate. What a gorgeous evening as well, eh?
It is a gorgeous evening. I'm sure it would, you know, it'd be even better if there was some football around. But again, you know, have you ever been referred to as being normal in an introduction like that, Dave?
Well, I suppose in mad times, the mad become normal. I haven't.
I know you've got plenty of stories to tell about Big Norm, but that's probably for another story, another day.
Yeah, it's definitely not for a radio show, let me tell you.
Now, when we spoke last week, you were working your way through those old AFC Wimbledon videos. What's been the choice entertainment this week in Anderson Mansions?
Yeah, I sort of bigged myself up and watched those. That was good fun. This week I've been sort of still out doing the walking and hitting a load of golf balls. Actually hurt my back. I tried yoga for the first time. It was my wife does it and she was trying to show me it, and I ended up doing my back in, so that was much amusement around the house for a couple of days. But I've been hitting some golf balls and in the garden and messing around. But I have to tell you that, like everyone, we're all now experts with Zoom and house party and all these different ways to communicate with people. And me and the guys from the golf club have been having like a quiz, I'm going to say 2 to 3 times a week. One night we have it with so all the families are involved, and it's just general knowledge where we all come up with 2 or 3 questions each. And it's been really good fun, Tim. You know, you feel like you've socialized. But I have to, there's different topics. So Griggsy, who organized it, we'll text you out. So it's maybe text you sports. So you'd have to give 3 questions on sports. I make it history. Someone else make it 70s, 80s, that sort of thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So anyway, Tony Wallace. And I don't usually mention my mates by name, but I have to do this. So anyway, Griggsy has sent Tony Wallace the topic of the 80s. So obviously Tony then has to come up with 3 questions in the 80s. So we come to the night, we're all having a few beers, and it's Tony's questions. One of Tony's questions was, in what year did Frank Bruno win his first world title fight? So I was thinking, I think I put 1986, 87. Well, most of us were around about the end of the 80s. What was the answer, Ginge? Because he's Ginger lad. He says, yeah, Frank Bruno, 1995.
Has there been a recount on all the previous quizzes he's been involved in?
And it was like, I swear to you, I fell off my seat. I don't know why he did it for fun or why he didn't, but it was just the funniest answer. So he's been tortured since. and now he's been named on a podcast. So I have to say, honestly, it was the best answer I've ever heard for an 80s question. The answer was 1995. So a bit of that, and obviously if you, 6 miles every day, 6 beers every night.
it could be said that that's almost a balanced diet.
Well, anybody that knows me will know it is a balanced diet. But yeah, so I've been doing, and obviously sort of keeping in touch with things, and I know we'll talk about stuff as we get down the line, but yeah, I think it's essential to get out, especially with the weather it is, get out and do some sort of exercise. I was thinking as well about how managers are dealing with this, with keeping the group of players together. And I know I speak to the guys at Chertsey and still involved on the group ops, so because I'd set them up and
but they know you're still on there.
Yeah, Kev said, well, to be fair, when I left, Kev said, just keep it on there. But, you know, he trusts me for to keep it sort of secret between, obviously, would never tell anyone. But they've been doing sort of in-house keep fit sessions, because a couple of lads are fitness instructors, and they've been setting up different things to do. And it sort of got me thinking that, well, that's really inventive, and I'm sure other people are doing the same. So I'm interested to hear how managers and coaches and players are really, have they switched off? Are they still on it? Do you know what I mean? Where do you draw the line with this stuff?
Well,
it's
difficult, isn't it? Because we don't know where this is heading, how long it's going to be around. How can you plan a fitness regime, you know, beyond just keeping a certain level of fitness? I see today in the news that I think the German Bundesliga players are talking about, you know, being ready to play games next month maybe, and if they're allowed to do so. But then we also saw yesterday, fairly esteemed journalist Oliver Holt tweeting that he heard or come to an assumption that non-league might not be able to get back until January at the earliest.
Yeah, where did that? I mean, I read the tweet. Where did he get that sort of information from?
I think it came from the government's update on a daily basis. Chris right. Whitty there had mentioned, you know, without vaccinations, without other testing and that being rolled out on a mass scale, then there still need to be social distancing. And I guess from there he took that meant that you'd have to play, you know, if games were to get underway, it'd have to be played behind closed doors maybe, so you couldn't have the crowds there. But then at non-league level, playing a game behind closed doors is probably not going to help the club trying to put a game on, because it's going to cost them more to put a game on than not be playing at all. So I think that's where it came from. But I guess we all have to, you know, keep these possibilities in mind as well.
Yeah, it's I was just thinking I've managed the games where I thought it was behind closed doors because there was no one there. But it's, I don't know. I think, listen, the only thing I would say to every manager, whether it's your first season or it's your 50th season, and all the experience of that if I was still a manager, and think, I'll put myself against, say, Kevin McLaren, who took over for me. I've been in the job, I felt 100 years, Kev's first job as a manager. In this situation, he knows as much about it as I do. So I think everybody, whether you've been a manager for an awful long time or you're new into it, is in the same boat. Because very difficult to address it when every day is a different day for how it's being dealt with, and the people at the top who I think are doing a great job on the circumstances. Very, very easy, you know. Sometimes when I listen to, without getting political, I listen to the journalists, and it reminds me of supporters would come to you at 5 o'clock and tell you what team you should have played at 3 o'clock. You know, and I feel there's a bit of that going on with the news media, but that's just my own thing. But how do you do that? What do you do as a manager? I'd be keen to speak to managers. I know we're trying to get Jono on and he's had a problem, but just to speak to different managers and go, how do you see it? What are you going to do? Because we're all guessing.
We are all guessing, really. And it's interesting to see social media is there's lots of, one of the things I was going to chat to Jono about was his select Premier League 11, which caused a bit of a furore on Twitter with you know what it's like when a manager makes a decision and then everybody else watching disagrees with it. That was an interesting thing. But you're seeing clubs even now announcing new signings for the new season.
Yeah.
And this is something that we've spoken about many times, because as much as a player may pledge his allegiance to you, until he's signed a form, he's able to go off and sign for whoever else he wants, and those forms won't be out for the new league, the new season, because no one knows really when that's going to start.
I know it's, but I suppose you have to try and, I don't know, you have to try and keep doing something, you know. It's a very, very difficult. As I say, Tim, I would have no idea how to approach it, are you still trying to keep your own? I spoke to another I suppose I shouldn't really name him, so I won't. I spoke to another non-league manager the other day, and we were talking about the fact of the season has now been suspended. The club that he works at really don't have any finances, and they're now awaiting the furlough payment from the government to pay out on 80% of what the contract is, I'm guessing. And I'm thinking, well, that's a real, the fact that the club hasn't got a penny to pay it, you know, and I'd imagine this particular club wouldn't be on their own. So as much as we're worried about when the next season starts, it's got to be, there's got to be some teams worrying that they'll ever be back.
Indeed, and we've, one of the things with the season lower down being voided already is that the restructuring that was due to take place at the lower levels at the end of the season isn't going to take place this pre-season now. It's going to take place next season, at the end of next season. But it could be that that restructuring needs to be thought out again if clubs are in a position where they can't take up any role within the pyramid, or if they want to take demotion because of the cost that they can foresee. There's a whole series of variables which we're probably not going to know for months to come.
Yeah. Listen, don't get me wrong. And our show is to talk about non-league football, you know, but there's businesses, including my own, that have been hit massively by this, and football, and the whole entertainment business, you know, theatres, pubs, restaurants, football up and down the country, especially at our level, because clubs don't have a massive bank account to sustain any length of downtime. So it's, listen, you know me, I'll always try and have an answer because I think I'm clever. I'm not really, but I'll always have a big mouth. But I find myself struggling to answer these questions, then. I really do. The one thing I wanted to go back to, because it's easy to get dour and down and see all the negatives. The one thing I was thinking about were players in a situation now where the managers ain't going to see them, and they're doing these fitness classes by Zoom and by different sorts of social communication. I was thinking earlier on today about when I first started in non-league, of the old school player, and if this happened then, believe me, you were getting people. But if, you know, I'm thinking if it stopped now and they came back in, I'm going to say August, September, if we're very, very lucky, that would be some hell of a preseason. We used to run the backsides off them for 4 or 5 weeks to get them to some sort of fitness back in the day. The lads nowadays are much more tuned athletes and look after themselves much better. And I don't want to take away from the guys back then, because in many ways I enjoyed it better socially, and I just enjoyed the character better. But I'm telling you, I wonder what it'd be like to give them guys the amount of downtime that today's non-league players are going to have. That would have been, I'd like to see the outcome of that.
I would have thought that there would have been a fair few clubs having to order some double XL shirts.
Certainly larger shorts. Yes, because I always have to get one at the club I was working at, you know. But
obviously, we're enjoying the sunshine, and you know, it's a different world. But it's not easy, you know, on the lockdown. But if you can avoid catching the virus, it's much simpler than having to cope with all its effects. And old friend of the show and manager at Woking FC, Alan Dowson, was front page of this week's non-league paper, speaking about how he ended up being hospitalised with the virus. It can affect us all, can't it?
It can, Tim. And I spoke to him, I'm going to say Tuesday, this is Thursday, only a couple of days ago, after someone had texted me to say that Dice had sort of contracted it. And I thought, oh, I wasn't, has he, hasn't he? And then I seen a non-league paper. So I gave him a ring and left him a message. I won't say it was in the message. People mightn't find it funny, but Dice loved it. But he rang me back and, you know, the two parts of it, the serious part first, he did have it. he was very ill, and he was concerned about his, you know, his, you know, he thought he could have died from it, you know, which isn't like Douse at all. And anybody that knows him, he's Mr. Upbeat and funny, and he, believe me, he hasn't lost that. But in the description of getting the virus and how it, day after day, it got worse and worse to the point of he was struggling to breathe. He then went to hospital and had some oxygen for a few hours, and you know, didn't get better straight away, but was then not thought to be in danger. I'm not sure how long he stayed in hospital, but he says he got out, and this is maybe 4 weeks on where we are now, Tim, and he said he's sort of now feeling like he's starting to recover, but it's knocked him for six for sort of 4 or 5 weeks. But his humor was brilliant in it. You know, one story he did say is that he said that they had Woking had a game called off, Dagenham pulled out of the game quite late at the very, very start of this, and Douse was raging at that particular moment. And he was firing off, you know, as we all do. And Dice was saying, oh, it's a joke. And, you know, it's only a flu, you know. And he says after he was sort of got out of hospital and he was recuperating, one of his players phoned him up and says, all right, Gaffer, how's that flu going? You know, so still had his humour and his back sort of on his way to full fitness. I told the story about the player because I think that you have to respect our humour within the dressing room. So I'm not taking away from what Alan thought of getting it and how he was treated and that side of it. I'm not really sure I need to say this, but I wanted to say it. And we're not, none of us take it lightly, but those of us who are in and around the game of football, our humour is a dark place at times where we find the stupidest things funny. And I have to say, Alan made me smile with his whole recollection of it. And the other one was in the hospital. The nurse was saying to him, because he was struggling to breathe, okay, Mr. Dyson, just calm down and, you know, speak slowly and more clearly. And he said, this is how I always talk.
I don't think I've ever heard him talk slowly.
Which I just thought it was hilarious, you know. But so that was his humour. He's on the way to recovery, and we're all delighted about that. And I say his humour, we're not taking away from any of the seriousness of the whole COVID-19 situation.
Mm. Yeah, and the good thing is that the people are recovering from it. There are those that aren't, of course. But I guess we need to build that into the equation as well when we're talking about, you know, bringing players back and pre-season and that. Some of them would have suffered from this, and which is affecting their breathing, their lung capacity, and you know, getting back into pre-season, as you say, running up Horsenden Hill as some of the local pre-seasons used to be. It will be a bit too tough on them.
Yeah, as I say, we're a long way from being back to doing that. I feel, sadly, I feel, funny enough, Horsenden Hill is where I do my walks most day. I live quite close to it, Tim, you know, but I think it's like anything. It's like trying to guess. Well, we can always try and guess the score of a football match because we feel we've a little bit of knowledge about the game of football. We can't second guess this because we've no knowledge of it, you know, and I think we'd be foolish to try. Hand on heart, I just hope everyone stays as safe as they can, and as a nation we'll get through it because that's the sort of people we are. But I was a bit like Douse when it first happened. I thought it was going to be 2 or 3 week thing, and I'm very aware that I underestimated it, and it's far from that, you know. So hang in there. We'll try and talk about football more than the virus because we're more knowledgeable on the second subject. But let's see if we can manage to talk about football for a couple of weeks.
So let's head on over to an old friend of the show. We're recording this on St George's Day, so who better to get on than England's very own non-league saint? He's welcome back to the Non-League Football Show. Goalkeeping coach for England team, Mick Payne.
Jim, absolutely delighted to be on. You know, as I say, it's always an honour to be on the non-league show, and I'm sure I'm going to have a real good opportunity to have a chat with Dave and go through a number of things.
Yeah, now we do live in bizarre times at the moment, but we had a brief chat earlier, and I can tell from your voice you're always one of those very cheery and inspirational people, and I think you've been doing that locally, haven't you? You've been using your infectious spirit to keep your neighbours both fit mentally and physically.
Yeah, Tim, I think it's a difficult time for everybody. Mad world. There's no doubt about that. But you did right, just saying, there's no future in the past. It's all about what you have to do next. And you did right. I mean, I get the neighbours out here. We're on a small little street, and, my football sort of background and my sort of teaching background and fitness background, I get all the guys out in the road Monday, Wednesday and Friday. We get about 16 to 20 people out there, and the youngest being 8, I think the oldest being 80. And we have a 25-minute, 30-minute session of just fitness, bit of fun, just getting them going. And it's just a great community sort of spirit, no doubt about that.
Dave, it puts your 6-mile walk maybe to shame now.
Yeah. Well, listen, I'm just worried for Mickey's neighbours. He'll have them diving about soon, if this goes much longer.
But
I think it is. I mean, well, I was saying to Tim before you came on, Mickey, that it doesn't matter if you're a manager of 2,000 games experience or 10 games experience. You're on the same level with this stuff because no one's ever experienced it. How do you deal with it? Have you spoke to any of the guys about how they're maintaining their players' fitnesses or that sort of stuff? Have you spoke to anyone about that?
Yeah, Dave, so first of all, great to speak to you, mate.
We haven't spoken
for a while. I really, really appreciate you having me on. But you're right. I mean, I've spoken to a number of people, and it's a difficult time. There's no sort of dressing it up in any way. But, I think they're getting their individual sort of programs. I've spoken to a couple of guys. I know Mark Cousins at Bromley. I've had a good chat with him, the keeper there. He says he goes out, although he hates running, he goes out and does a run. He's doing a bit of ball work himself, in the garden. And as I say, from the manager's point of view, Davey, they've just got to just keep positive. Keep believing it will end, because it will end. There's no doubt about it. We've got to just keep that sort of upbeat sort of thing, because as a manager, you're leading. You're leading by example, and you're going to just keep these players on track and, make them feel that, when we do come back, which we will, that everything will be fine,
And just, listen, my own opinion is that, and you know me, I'll stick my mouth wherever I feel it needs to be stuck, but I genuinely didn't have an answer, so feel free to not have one. What's your feelings on what's been announced this week with the National League?
Well, as I said, spoken to people, absorbed it, sat down and thought about it. But it's, again, Davey, I just feel whatever's made, the decision is made. I spoke to Tim off air, and I just said, these people are making decisions. They're making decisions because they believe they're right. They're not doing it because they're trying to get someone who's going to, be promoted, be demoted, whatever you want to call it. They're making a decision what they feel is right. And I think when everyone sits down, just takes a bit of a breath, takes a bit of a minute, and just say, look, these decisions have been made for the right reasons. And at the end of it, the games are finished. It's a difficult one. They've still got other decisions to make. We know that, Dave, in terms of certain clubs, whether they go up, whether they go... listen, it's going to be... you're not gonna make everyone happy. You know that. You know you're not. Yeah. But at the end of it, it's just about trying to be fair and be honest about your opinion.
Yeah, I agree, Mickey. I just struggle to come with any sort of better idea. You know, I think that if you haven't got a better idea, then it's time to go with the idea that's been put forward. And I agree with you. As much as the FA at times irritate me and league boards irritate me, I'm sure I irritate them as well. But I do. The word unprecedented has been chucked about like the word legend was a couple of weeks ago. So it's unprecedented. And I feel for the people trying to make the decision as well as the people who have to accept the decision. So I think you're right, Mickey.
Yeah, I think, you're dead right. You know, these guys who are making the call, if you like, Dave, you know, they're making the call as they see it. They're not trying to, for a better word, say, look, we're favouring that team, we're favouring this team, we're favouring that club. They're not favouring anyone. They're making the call, as you say. It's an incredible, horrible situation that everyone's in. And there is going to be people that are upset. There's going to be people that go, well, you know, we've had a reprieve. But at the end of it, they're making the right decision as they believe the right reasons.
Yeah, and the people at the top are often criticised, and we had some sad news this week. It's tough for everybody in the current climate, but sadder when you are affected directly by COVID-19. And we learned this week the death of Mike Appleby, a man responsible for the restructuring of the non-league pyramid that's still unfolding today, and a man that was very influential in properly establishing the England C setup during his time at the FA.
Tim, you know, you just mentioned his name, and I'm sitting here now talking to you guys here, and I'm shivering. You know, I'm shivering when you say it, because he was a top, top, top individual, a wonderful man, a fantastic friend of mine, and, you know, we've known each other a long time, you know, over sort of 16, 17 years. And what he achieved for the England C setup was, people perhaps don't always realise, you know, that man, Mike Appleby, was the instigator, the driving force, whatever you want to call it, of getting that team really to the fore. And, I'm sitting here now, I feel privileged, I feel honoured, I feel, you know, so, so pleased to be able to say something about him. You can tell by my voice. I can see him on the sideline. When we had games, there he'd be, you know, he was so proud to work for the FA, so, so, so proud. And then we'd have the games and he'd be standing there in his blazer and you could see, you know, there was a pride that, you know, the boy's done well. And, you know, Mike Appleby was the first port of call, you know, these guys who ever got a call up for the England C setup, Mike Appleby would be the person who would call them and say, look, you know, you've been selected for England C and, you know, all those lads, all those boys who've had, who've been touched by Mike, you know, in one way or another, will be devastated, because he was such an unassuming, professional, gentleman who had so much to offer. And I can't, he was one in a million. I can't speak highly enough of him.
Yeah, and, when we spoke earlier, Mick, you were explaining about the, how he expanded the England C project and how you basically travelled the world.
Well, as I said, you know, again, you know, as I said, to sit here, and I've spoken to many of my colleagues as well, as I say, the word wow just comes out, because, yeah, you know, we travelled the world. We went to Russia, we went to Grenada, we went to Barbados, we went to Bermuda, you know, we went to Jordan. You know, I remember going to the King Abdullah Stadium in Jordan, you know, and it was, I think, actually 1-1-0. I always remember it. And, you know, we played against their top sides. You know, we didn't play against sides even their under-23s, their under-21s, full of internationals, And we were so, so competitive. And, you know, Mike Appleby was, as I say, you know, the man who brought that all together with a real nothing ever fazed him, and he was just brilliant at what he did, and how he got that all together was just incredible.
And as I say, you know, his restructuring work, which he took plenty of criticism for, is still unfolding now, and it's still gradually we're getting there to that pyramid that he wanted to achieve. But even after he retired at the FA, he was still carrying on, putting many hours every week into football at the Spartan League.
Yeah, look, I go back to it. He was someone who worked, within the system for many, many, many years. And as you say, went back to the Spartan League. But he was a football person, massive, massive football person. And we don't get people like that. We don't get people like that. I'm sure there's people, but we don't. He, man and boy, he actually worked his way up. And as I said, he had an opinion. He had an agenda. But he believed in non-league football. And for me, when you believe in non-league football and what he achieved, I say the highest accolades, you can't even give him, because he was absolutely brilliant.
Oh, well, high praise indeed. Now, we've been speaking about how we've been keeping ourselves entertained during the lockdown, and we've heard about your... keeping your neighbours fit and that, but
Tim, sorry, I have another theory on Mickey's, Mickey doing his keep fit stuff. I think that the local authorities have told Mickey to go out to make sure everybody else goes in.
Well, I like that, Dave. Thank you very much. Listen, you know that as well as us as goalkeepers. Like, we're a special breed, Davey. We have a special understanding. And look, I'm speaking to you guys now. I just feel so... I'm trying to be so upbeat because there's only one way. You've got to do it. You've got to be upbeat. You've got to try to be this positive influence. I must admit, I go out there sometimes on a Monday, Wednesday and Friday, and I don't know if I fancy it, but I walk out. I walk out and I see them, very similar to the football. But as soon as you get with people, as soon as you get with players... You feel that you own something. You know what I'm saying?
I do.
I go out there. Dave, you've been there. Been there on a Tuesday and Thursday night, Dave. You know what it's like.
Yeah. Some nights you walk in the door, Mickey, and you're like, but once it's a fun. It's that's the drug. That stuff, isn't it? That's the drug. People talk about football being a drug, Tim. You can walk in and what Mickey's doing for. And I said, yes, because. What he's doing for the streets, brilliant. But when you walk in on a Tuesday night in February, you've had a crap day at work. Yeah. The last thing you want to do, you might be in a bad run, they might have 3 or 4 poor results. But once you walk in there and get around the guys, then it just takes you somewhere else. And I people say football's a drug. I think that is where the drug kicks in, Mickey.
Yeah, a lot. Dave, you've had success, I've had success. We've had disappointments, we've had problems, we've had things thrown at us. But at the end of it, you go in, you owe it to the players. But also, Dave, as well as you owe it to yourself. Because if you, I don't use this word too often, but if you go in there and you cheat, you know as a coach, you know as a manager, and do you know what? I haven't done the business tonight. I don't like that. I can honestly say, I might have done it once or twice, but then I drove home in the car and gone, I haven't produced it tonight. I haven't done myself any justice. I'm not going to do that again. And I think that's what's important. I think you've got to be able to live with yourself. When you're in football and when you coach, you've got to go out there and say, I've produced as much as I could. I've given everyone my energy. I've given everyone my experience. But guess what? I'll give everyone a chance to improve. And that's what I do,
Well, of course you do, because I think if you don't, Mickey, you're found out. And to be fair, you've been doing it for a couple of days now, haven't you? You've been around for a while. So I think you'd have been found out. And it's true, you can... Yeah, listen, I used to use the saying, you can't kid a kidder. Yeah, and there'll be days when you're not where you need to be, because we're not all machines. But Mickey, you're right in what you're saying. you know that before anybody knows it. And you also know when it's been good, when you come off the coaching field or from a result or from your own performance within the dressing room or on the coaching field. You know yourself, and that buzz, people talk to me, what do you miss now you've retired? And there is little bits and pieces you do, and that is one of them. That association with the lads, that buzz, that knowing that you're in that groove, you know?
You just use the word, Dave. I think the word buzz is a buzz. There's no doubt about that. As I say, you when you're out there working with the boys, whether you're going through some sort of a technical thing or you're going through some, setup, whether it's a set piece, or you're working on an individual player, sometimes and you see him, all of a sudden that individual player sort of like gets it, what you put across, yeah. On, and they get it, and you feel that we're teachers, we're coaches, and that's what we come into it for. There's nothing better than playing, Dave, we all know that. But
yeah.
The second best bit of it is coaching and teaching, because, what's the point of all the experience and everything you've done, when you get a chance to sit back and look at it, we've all worked at the game, and I'm not saying I know it all, but I've got experience, I've got a lot of,
yeah.
Like you have, and lots of coaches around, I've got a huge amount of experience. Let's give it to the players, let's give it to the next generation, we want to get better, and then hopefully those players will be the next generation of coaches,
yeah.
and it just goes on, Dave, doesn't it?
It does, mate, it really does, and it's good to talk to you. It's been a while, Mickey, and
it's been a long while, mate.
When we get out the other end of this, I'll come and see you.
Well, it will. I've had a few opportunities to come on the show and been up there with you, and when we were up there, the BBC there, and remember it. But this is true actually with Caroline, Caroline Barker. Would you believe I was in Athens? I always remember it. And she rings me up and she says, "Can you come on?" And I'm there in Athens in a lovely hotel looking over at the Acropolis there. And I said to her, "I'm looking over the Acropolis here, Caroline, And we had a chat about football, but it just shows the day, doesn't it? Where football takes you, what you do, and we've all got that. And speaking to you tonight, mate, it just, I know we haven't spoken for a while, but you just get on with it. I mean, it's just great. We just pick up from where we left off, don't we?
Yeah, yeah. And that's the joy of the game, Mickey. You don't see people from pillar to post, but when you bump into them, it's as if you left them 10 minutes ago. And it's always like that. And that humour, I was talking earlier on before you came on, I actually spoke to Alan Dowson a couple of days ago. Some of it has to stay private, because we're on the radio. But the humour within it. And I think that the reason it has to stay private is people might, the humour's like, Mickey, it's brutal, And me and him were in hysterics laughing. And when I say you, I'll tell you, you'll be in hysterics, but you always feel protected. But shame, really. I feel protective that I can't say it, but that humour and that, as you say, picking up from where you left off, whether it be last week or last year, is a real sort of bond. The other one I wanted to make the point of, Tim, that Mickey's talking about, is relationships. And with Mickey doing the goalkeeping, it becomes very personable because you are maybe 3-1 as opposed to 15-1 as a coach doing with the outfield lads. So that relationship, and that's why your bond is massive, the old goalkeepers union, we call it. But that's why it's massive, because we're closer than the other guys.
Yeah, and
You know that as well as I do. I say it many, many times. The goalkeeping position, and you studied it, you played it, you've been involved with it. I say to everybody all the time, any team that's going to be successful has to do it with a decent keeper. Not just a decent keeper, a good goalkeeper. Whether you're playing grassroots right the way up to the top level, no one achieves things with a poor keeper. But that then comes down to the coaching. And when I say coaching, I mean, I look back at Tony Roberts. I look at Robbo, you know, when he was at Dagger and Redbridge. Listen, Tony Roberts was like 35, 36, 37. I can't remember. I wasn't going to teach Tony Roberts goalkeeping. There's no way I was going to teach him goalkeeping. But what I was going to do was go in there and be an ally for him. Make sure that he was prepared, he was ready. He had someone to bounce off of, Dave. You know, when things were going well, you know, when things were going well, you need to just keep it, you know, just keep a lid on it. When things weren't going so well, you have to look at trying to, you know, build him up. And not just him, but then you have the sub keeper, the number two keeper, you know, making sure. I mean, I was so, so fortunate at Dagenham and Redbridge when I was there, when I was in the national. It was Tony Roberts and Paul Gothard. I mean,
wow.
Two of the best goalies I could ever have. You know, they were, I mean, Robbo's now like the Welsh national goalkeeper, you know, for the full team over the world. And would you believe, you know, Paul Gothard is the New Zealand's goalkeeping coach. I mean,
oh, is that where he is?
Yeah, he's out in New Zealand, Paul de Goff. You know, I mean, he played for the England amateur set up as well, like the coach, so-called England C. But there were two lads that, you know, and it was just, for me, I used to go in, and then all the keepers I worked with, Dave, you know, you've done it, is making sure that they were ready for Saturday. And sometimes it used to be a harder session or a more relaxed session. But the key to me, with me coaching, was always about making sure what they wanted. Not what I wanted as a coach, what they wanted. And we used to, as you say, be an ally. We used to talk about how we were going about the sessions, what was important. And then, as I said, on match day, they were ready to perform.
Well, we look forward to that time when you can start helping goalkeepers get ready for Saturday. Mick, it's always a pleasure to draw upon your experiences, your knowledge, and your enthusiasm. Thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show again. And as Dave said, hopefully we'll meet up again very soon and hear more of your stories.
Yeah, stay safe, Paul.
Yeah, Dave, always, you know, as I said, keep looking back, and I always remember seeing you at Wembley, mate. I don't want to bring it up too much because you've had too many of those good things. But I remember seeing you coming up the stairs, and there I was waiting because I was doing some talking there. I was made up for you, mate. I absolutely made up for you. To talk to you, a class is a major, major friend, you know, the journey you've been on. And as I say, Tim, to always be asked to come on this show is a privilege and honour. And I just love being part of what you do. So, you know, well done to the Non-League Show.
Thank you, and it works both ways. Yeah, take care of yourself, mate. So time once again to head on over to the virtual Non-League Paper Towers and a welcome to the Non-League Show with senior writer at the Non-League Paper, David Richardson. Welcome back, David.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for having me on. Hope you're well.
Well, we are well, and we're keeping positive. Another slow week in the world of non-league news, truthful. I'm sure, as you will tell us later, there's plenty that you will be reporting about come the weekend in the paper. But the main news, I guess, was the National League announcing that clubs had voted to end the season.
Yeah, that's right. It's obviously been a vote that's been going on for the last couple of weeks. And the National League announced on Wednesday that with almost 90% of the responses returned, the clubs were in favour of ending the season, now cancelling the rest of the fixtures up to April 25th, which is actually this Saturday, the final day of the season. That vote was due to end in May, May 7th, I believe the date is. Basically, they've told clubs a bit in advance that is the result, to give them a bit more sort of clarity, really, I suppose, tell them a bit earlier so they can start planning for what the future might entail. And now, obviously, we move into the second phase of the voting process, which is how to conclude the season, steps one and two.
Yeah, it's just one part of the jigsaw. And we know that the season's ended, but how or what it will all mean for the clubs involved is still up in the air. What are the timescales for that vote?
Yeah, so that remains to be seen, really, at the moment. The options for clubs to decide on how they want to end the season, that hasn't been sent to them yet. I believe the National League are still going over those. I think there will likely be a points per game solution in terms of relegation, a null and void solution, as we've seen lower down in the pyramid, or perhaps some sort of other solution, possibly involving the playoffs, maybe. That statement on Wednesday obviously leaves the sort of option of playoffs open. Obviously, they're not going to take place next month as they usually would. But at the moment, that could still be on the table. Now, as to how you would go about playing the playoffs at a later date, it's sort of a similar question, really, as to how you would finish the season. There's still issues with player contracts, when you would even hold the games, where the final would be played, things like that. And also then you've got to consider, say, Harrogate Town won those and they went into League Two. They're on a 3G pitch, which isn't allowed in the Football League, so they have to rip that up, put grass down. And that obviously takes time to do. So that would be, I guess, an option, but I think it would be unlikely we would see the playoffs played, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about football being full of opinions, and certainly, we haven't got much else to talk about at the moment. So on social media, it is full of people with opinions. But as we keep saying, there's so many variables involved in all these decisions that the leagues are having to make, the FA is having to make, that a player is going to be available, as you mentioned there, that the Harrogate 3G situation. Can have massive knock-ons and implications as to how future decisions can be made beyond even this season as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's sort of, you come up with one answer and it makes more questions, really. I think that's sort of the issue throughout this whole process. And again, everyone's not going to be happy with whatever answer does come up. Of course, we haven't mentioned yet the further sort of complication, really, of the link between Step 1 and League 2 in terms of the two promotion places and obviously the two that come down. At the moment, it could be possible that the EFL say, well, we're not going to relegate teams yet. We don't know what the EFL's going to do at the moment. So it almost seems a bit difficult for clubs to decide on wanting to go with some sort of promotion decided by points per game without knowing whether the EFL would actually accept two teams. At the moment, it looks like the EFL for next season would be running with 91 teams because obviously Bury being expelled. If they aren't placed into League Two, obviously there's one team short there. So could there be a scenario where Barrow are sort of Bury's replacement in League Two and do it that way if you were to null and void elsewhere? But, the likes of Harrogate, Notts County, Yeovil, the teams in the playoffs there, I'm sure they'll have plenty to say about that. And also at Step Two, where you've got Wealdstone flying high, haven't they, on their tails, and then in the north where you've got the York and King's Lynn scenario, which is a particularly interesting one. Should it come down to a points per game scenario, York City 2 points clear at the top, but King's Lynn have two games in hand, so on points per game King's Lynn would be champions. But as things stand at the moment, York are top. So these are all the different scenarios really in place at the moment. It's still just as uncertain, really, even though the first bit of the vote has been decided. There's still a lot of uncertainty about what lies ahead.
Yeah, and a discussion that I was having this week, that obviously that lower down the pyramid, things were voided, so there weren't any promotions, there weren't any relegations. But if the decision is going to be different higher up, and it's going to be points per game or some other solution that's not going to be voided, there's going to be clubs that will want to celebrate their promotion, their title win or something, but it's a good chance that those decisions are going to be made and announced when we're not allowed out to celebrate. And it probably says a lot about the weird world that we live in now.
Yeah, it sounds like it's sort of similar to the behind closed doors debate, really, in the sense that what real sort of benefit other than getting things decided does it bring? You know, clubs wouldn't be getting gate money. Players wouldn't be playing in front of fans. Fans wouldn't be able to see their team win a league or a cup or whatever. So yeah, it's a strange time really in football. It sort of seems like this has been rumbling on for quite a while now, and looks like it might keep on going. At the moment, I think probably the big thing for me really is how soon the EFL or rather when we know what the EFL are doing, how that will then play out on the national league, really, because in a way it is dictated by what the EFL do because of that link. Like I say, it'd be interesting to see what happens when that does.
Yeah, so the fate really in the hands of those higher up. And so, as I said, it's been a fairly quiet news week, but I'm sure you'll have a bumper filled newspaper this weekend. What can we expect to read?
Yeah, another packed 32-page edition this Sunday. I have lots of nice messages over the last few weeks from people reading and enjoying the paper still. So thank you to them. But yeah, plenty more to come this week. I've done a slightly different piece this week with a name called Steve Parmeter, who people might not know all too well, but he's actually a National League linesman who used to play for Canvey Island when
I do remember moving. I remember him as a player and as a linesman.
I do, very good. But I spoke to him this week actually, just about his Canvey Island days as they won the FA Trophy and moved to the divisions under Jeff King. Obviously now his time as a linesman in the National League and doing well there as he hopes to get into the Football League. So it was a slightly different piece I've done this week. We've got non-league icons with Steve McNulty, who I think needs no introduction really in the non-league scene.
He introduces himself definitely when he walks into a room.
Absolutely, but he's one of the great sort of non-league players, really. Obviously won promotions with Luton, Tranmere, Fleetwood into the Football League, and obviously at York now looking for another one. And I also spoke to Paul Lennon as well, who I think many people remember over in Kent for his time at FC United, a great leader. Of course, he was also at AFC Wimbledon and Woking as well, and he's still going at the age of 36. He spent the last few seasons at Punjab United in the Southern Counties East League. But he's still looking for one more opportunity at a club somewhere. But it's good to catch up with him about his career and his stories as well. And as usual, there's plenty more in the paper this weekend.
So plenty of reason to make sure that you've either get your copy from the local newsagents or supermarket, wherever you can get hold of it, or get a digital subscription organised. So thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show, David, and we look forward to reading the Non-League paper at the weekend.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks, Tim. Cheers. Bye.
Right, that's it for this week. Thank you to Dave Anderson for joining me.
My pleasure.
It's gone quickly. I was fearful. We had a last minute a guest drop out, and I was fearful that we might just turn into a few old blokes talking about football that wasn't happening. But maybe it was.
That's what we always turn into.
It's always good to get guests like a Mick on and learn from his experience and knowledge.
I'm going to leave you with a quote of the week, and Mickey just said it off air. Which we'd both seen today, and it made me giggle. And it was some guy had wrote in the newspaper saying, "Please God, open the pubs before we all become alcoholics." And I think I'd like to leave the listeners with that.
Well, leave them with a cold beer at least. Thanks to Dave. Thanks to the guests. Thanks to everybody for listening. Don't forget you can follow us throughout the season. Join in throughout the week on social media at Non League Show. Dave's on there at Dave Anderson 78. Caroline Barker at Caroline Barker. Myself at Tim Fuel. Plus, you can, of course, find us every week on Audio Boom, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio. You can get us via your smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. Also, look out there for the Non League Gaffer Tapes, which we'll bring back as soon as we can. Stay safe, stay home. Thank you and goodbye.
A Jibber Jabber production. JIBBA JABBA